From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words that have come unstuck in time. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Ross. As of today, it looks like we're going to have a Christmas in the lower to mid-60s here. What about the two of you? Does it actually seem a lot like Christmas around there?
Well, for me, it really does. There's snow outside. It just snowed a little bit today. And it's a chill in the air, not icy cold. It really feels like Christmas. It's a white Christmas, which is just beautiful.
Do you want me to sing it?
No, I don't, Kathy, please.
That'll damn, make it a I thought I Christmas. Could slip it in. Yeah, here it's well, Granada does Christmas well. I mean, lights and everything, and there's this whole little Christmas fair by the park, and it's definitely getting Christmassy. I, of course, have not bought any presents yet, so I'm one of those last-minute people.
Historically, I always have been, too. I used to be really bad, so bad that I would go out on like Christmas Eve, and I wouldn't even know what I was going to buy people. I would just kind of wander around until something hit me, you know?
Wow.
Ross and I used to do that. Ross, remember? I used to do that.
Do you remember that awful, it was like, I think it was the day before Christmas Eve, and we were looking for a tape on, I think, Wales for my son. Remember that, Kathy?
I do.
And it was a snowstorm.
Tower video, I remember.
Tower video, a snowstorm.
Oh, yeah.
The wind was blowing in our face. We got the tape, though. I remember that.
I remember it vividly.
And I remember looking at those whales 5,000 times for the next couple of months, too, as he kept putting it on.
Amazing.
Actually, Kathy and I know a lot about whales because of Alex.
He was always like, what's your favorite whale? I'd be like, I don't know, minke.
But at least we knew what a minke was because of him.
That's true.
I would never have known what a minke whale was unless for him. Whatever. That's good.
A minky? Like
yeah, when Inspector, M-I-N-K-E.
Like when Inspector Clouseau is talking about a monkey?
Yes, actually. But it looks like a mini blue whale is what a minke whale looks like.
Wow, okay.
Ross knows his whales.
Well, before we get into our main topic today, I'm sure that we have listener emails to get to.
Always.
We do. Kath, you want to read the email? This was a complicated one.
It was. It was a follow-up from Ed in Washington. We should thank him for it or not. I'm not sure, actually, who asked the other week. He had asked about the and the sooner the later.
Oh, right.
Remember?
Uh-huh.
And we talked about that and explained it was an adverb. It wasn't good enough for Ed.
We think. And Ed
that
is
was
right.
It. Okay. And Ed said, yeah, we said it's an adverb to him. And Ed asked the follow-up. He said, well, if it's acting as an adverb, then how is it modifying sooner and better? I understand what adverbs like slowly and quickly do, but what does the do?
Mm-hmm.
Ed had a good question.
That's a reasonable question, yeah.
It's a reasonable question, and we're going to give an unreasonable answer.
Oh, good.
Because basically, this is all over the place. We did a little bit of research on this. And the Oxford Dictionary said the can serve as an adjective in terms of modifying an adverb. An adverb in this case. We said we'd probably call it, and this is where we get controversial, a determiner. And a determiner is a word like the or that. And basically it kind of determines what's going on. And that means that it's in the and that, etc. What do? They modify, guess what? Nouns.
Uh-huh.
So then we get it to a point is the sooner or the sooner the better a noun? Is that whole phrase a noun? Then we get into Eric Partridge, who said, well, yeah, it's modifying the entire, which we had talked about earlier, I think. It modifies the entire phrase. That's an epithet. It modifies the whole phrase, okay?
The adverbial phrase, we should say, shouldn't we?
I don't know, Kat.
I'm throwing that one to you, baby.
Because some people, but really, that phrase is actually an adjective because it's modifying something, the sooner the better about something, right? So a lot of people, linguists would say, oh, that whole phrase is an adjective, and therefore the is modifying the whole phrase, so it's an adverb again.
What?
And then other people are saying the determinative is really an Anglo-centric sort of idea. It, in other languages, it doesn't work. So then is it an adverb or is it an adjective or is it a determinative? Kathy just highlighted something as saying it's an adjective too, they say. And you know what we're going to say? We have no idea. There's a lot
of. We don't even care anymore. We don't care.
Sorry, Ed.
But on one thing, I do think it's sort of interesting because, like, there was an article basically saying determinatives, you know, Anglo-centric, et cetera. But we're talking about English, so
yeah,
we have
sure.
to be Anglo-centric. But the key problem, really, with language, unlike, let's say, you know, axiomatic math with Euclid or whatever, is that it's messy and fuzzy. There are a lot of there's a lot of fuzziness in here. For example, even the or the in the statement in Old English, the used to be that in effect. It was like actually specifying something very like in a very determinative way. Now kind of it's sort of fuzzier. Language is fuzzy.
Yeah, the word the isn't the same as plugging in the numeral two or something like that.
No. Now let's go to something a little more simple from the old days. We're going to go back in the past. We're going to talk about anacronyms.
Anacronyms.
Okay, the question is, for example, like, why do we still dial a phone?
Oh, so these are phrases or terms that we use that don't actually apply to anything these days. They used to mean something, and we still use them, even though they don't literally mean
precisely.
Right.
An anacronym is a word that you use in an anachronistic way.
Yeah, cool.
It's something, what you did with the word refers to something, a former thing you used to do with it that does not apply anymore.
Yeah.
But the term is still used.
Yeah.
Like podcast.
Oh, well, yeah. There are no more iPods, are there?
Right.
You're right. Yeah. I never really think about the iPod and podcast anymore as being, you know, related.
I got something interesting on this. I was mentioning it to someone yesterday or the day before. Do you know where, you probably both know it. I didn't. You know where iPod comes from? The pod part?
Oh, I did.
Let's see, Fletcher, if you can guess. Fletcher might be able to guess being a film fan, and that gives it away.
Oh. Is it
2001 A Space Odyssey?
Open the pod bay doors. Open the pod bay doors, Hal. Yep, that's it.
Wow.
The guy liked how that sounded. It sounded modern and sort of, you know, spacey and stuff. So he threw it in the word.
Well, back in the AOL days, that I put that as the way, when I signed on, that's what I heard. Open the pod bay doors, Hal. Yes, I'm a nerd.
Well, so I'm sure we're going to jump into some. The ones that I can think of just right off the top of my head, we in radio, we still talk about cutting tape or getting things on tape. Like if I'm going to interview somebody, I'll usually have them say their name ahead of time just so I know I'm pronouncing it correctly. And I'll tell them, could you just say your name and spell it for me just so I have it on tape? And there's no tape. There's just these digital things. Right. And people still say filming something, even though very few movies are actually shot on film anymore.
Yeah, you're
That's
right.
That's true.
On a more technical level, in publishing, they still see things are letting and kerning, and letting means the space between lines. And
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
And that we've gotten books back and they go, you know, they have too much letting or whatever. And they don't use lead type anymore for most books.
Yeah.
No, they're all over the place.
So shall we start with one?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go something a little more prosaic. The term we're talking about, the anacronym, is dashboard.
Oh, the really dusty thing at the front of my car.
Yeah, that thing that you just sort of lean on and go, ew, what the hell? That. Okay, what did it come from? We have three choices,
dashboard.
Fletcher.
Okay.
One, a literal board during horse and buggy days used in the 1800s to keep grime from hitting riders. Two, a term invented by Henry Ford in 1903 for the Model A, a board across the front of the car. The dash was like the horizontal line, it looked like. Hmm. And three, a term invented in the 1400s, the Old English, okay, I'm going to butcher this, dasheboard, in contrast to steerboard, the steering side of the ship, and backboard, the opposite side. In effect, a bumper to protect the ship when docking.
Oh, see, you did a good...
These are cool.
You did a good job because you chose both horses and nautical terms. And those are two things that I really like when it comes to etymology, because there's so many things that come from both of those. I don't want to say it's the Henry Ford one, and the Old English one sounds fishy. So I'm going to go with the actual board on the horse and buggy.
Fletcher, you got it right. Yeah.
I think, Ross, we overdid the ship one.
We should have done
the steerboard and buckboard.
I was proud of those, but I think you're right. I think we got carried away there. No, it literally is basically a board or a leather apron in front of a carriage, and it was used to stop mud from splashing.
Oh.
Which is really cool.
From dashing up into your face? Yeah.
Yep. It's a really cool etymology, though. I really like that one, even though Fletcher guessed it.
Although, it seems to me, it's interesting to me that, okay, I understand it was in the front of the carriage, but the fact that it became inside the car, the panel under the windshield, seems like it still was quite a step.
I agree, yeah.
To get from keeping dirt off your, like, duster coat.
No, but if you ever look at, like, really early cars before Ford... They call them, you know, they're carriages, and they look literally like carriages, horseless carriages without horses. So basically, I think they just took a carriage and put a motor in it.
Yeah,
so you have the dashboard there anyway. You know, but then you expand it to,
and the dashboard just kind of creeps back a little until it's behind the windshield.
Yeah.
And then, but it's still
called
the dashboard.
Although I was going to say, and then it holds a glove compartment. No one ever, it used to literally be for gloves. Yeah. You don't put gloves in there.
Exactly.
Everybody I know just has their manual in there and a lot of stuff that you wonder, what is this?
Don't open that.
Yeah, right. No.
You know what's funny? What's funny, though, about this as an anacronym is we're kind of saying, okay, it got moved all the way back behind the windshield. Why is it a dashboard? Right. But in like, whatever, 100 years, people might say something like, why do we say dialing, whatever, if it's a phone
or
whatever.
Fletcher, you moved right on to the right thing.
Our next word was dial. Yeah. Like what I mean is it's obvious to us why we say dial a phone, but maybe in 100 years, it won't be obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Just like dashboard isn't obvious to us now. It's just interesting.
I think you're
right. You know, of course, the farther we get from it in time, the stranger it is. But it wouldn't have been strange to people 100 years ago.
No. Yeah. But I'm not sure dial is good. I'm not sure for a young person, dial is particularly going to be. No one dials phones nowadays, really.
Yeah, but presumably they have grandparents who dial the phone and might say something about it, no?
Yeah, I know, possibly. But do they really associate it, though?
No.
I wonder, and you know, we can talk about dial however you want here, but if that's still the word that's associated with the action of pushing the numbers, then that's what it becomes. Like dial doesn't mean a turning.
It doesn't mean
dial means pushing the numbers or calling up somebody on the phone. So so like for young people, that's what dial is.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
That's the whole point of an acronym, because a dashboard doesn't mean something that prevents mud from dashing
up
to your, you know, to your body. It just means it doesn't mean that at all.
Mm-hmm.
If someone showed me a quote dashboard on a carriage, I wouldn't call it a dashboard.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Don't call it the thing that keeps the dust and mud off your clothes.
Yeah, that's what I would call it too. Exactly that.
Okay, dial. The word is dial.
Mm-hmm.
What's the genesis of the word, the origination for it? Did it come from the concept, the word meaning daily? Was it an aberration on daily? Did it evolve from the word hourglass? or did it evolve from the word sundial?
Oh, dial. Around. Well, it seems weird, but I'm just going to say sundial.
Two for two, baby.
Oh, good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to explain this one to me, though. It just, that one just seemed the most likely, but I don't, but I can't explain that.
It's all three, really.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
That's the key. I mean, you got it right, but any one you picked would have been correct.
I just saw that.
Daily, the dial comes from, daily comes from dialis in Latin, which comes from dies, day, which comes actually from shine. The whole idea is shining. And then from in Proto-Indo-European, it became day. So they're all three are correct. They're basically faces. The one question I do have.
No, hourglass isn't correct.
Oh, hourglass. I'm sorry. I didn't think of hourglass. Hourglass is wrong. The other two are right. I was thinking of hourglass in terms of time, in terms of day.
Yes.
But you're right. Yeah. No, that's true. But the other interesting thing, though, is there was a word dial plate, which comes back, goes back to the 1680s as in terms of a round plate. And then from there, it kind of like whizzed over into a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first use that they could find of dialing as in a phone?
Oh, you know, that's funny because I don't know how Alexander Graham Bell used his phone. Did he just pick it up and all of us? What? I don't know how phones used to work. That's a really good question. Okay, when's the first instance of actually dialing a phone? Actually dialing it? It seems later. Right? People didn't dial things earlier. They like picked up the phone and told people who they wanted to talk to.
Right.
Right. So what are we talking, like the 1920s?
I would have thought that, but no. Oh. 1879.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
The concept of a circular plate marked with numbers and letters which can be rotated to establish connection. 1879. Dial tone was 1920.
Okay.
But let's go backwards here. But there's also an attestation that Kath and I found from the 1650s to work with the aid of a dial or compass or measuring as with a dial, which is in effect is rotate. In effect, I would think it like you're rotating with your finger, maybe. I don't know.
I don't,
I'm just
that,
guessing.
I don't think so. Am I pushing it?
Sorry.
But I also have to step back and say there was a reason for hourglass. I just found why, because it was buried here in the notes. OED, 1410 nautical, we're going to nautical, was the term dial, D-Y-O-L-L, which was likely to refer to a sand glass,
oh,
i.e. an
wow.
hourglass. So all three were right.
Oh,
that's
wow.
why we had them, Ross.
Wow,
we were being
Kathy.
Clever. Not now, but before we were clever. Once we were smart, Ross.
I know.
That's amazing.
But that's the problem with etymology, though, because you think you got it. Then you get, next thing you know, that's related to this, and you never know, whatever. Let's just skip this one. We have hang up. We're not going to bother with choices on hang up, Fletcher. When do you think the literal use of hanging something up?
Hanging up the phone.
Oh, like hanging up the phone. We're talking about phones.
Yeah.
Just pick a decade.
Well, if dialing was in the 1870s, then let's say it was hanging it up, 1910s.
Good, ooh. Fletcher. Very good.
Did I get it?
1912.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right.
Do you still say hang up? Like,
absolutely.
I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always say it.
I think that's...
Does anyone ever
say
anything else?
People don't say... I mean, what would you say? Like, turn off the phone?
You say hang up.
It's
I'm going to hang up now.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of it. Do you ever say anything different? Because one of those solicitation calls. And I said, yeah, I'm just going to hang up. I mean, I just said it automatically like that.
Sure.
I would never say anything else. Cut off? No.
I'm curious about hang up, like oh, he's got a real hang up.
I think that's from the 30s or 40s, I think. I'm going to look it up.
Problem.
I think it comes from like
I just looked
up.
It up. A problem, a difficulty, 1950.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Emotional problem, 1952. Yeah.
But
1950s.
It's not really related to phone. I think it's more related to you're hung up, you're like hanging. You can't do anything.
Yeah, I guess. It was delaying things initially.
Yeah, I don't
like
think
something
the same
that
thing.
Delayed. It was a hang up. Yeah. Okay.
Now we're going to move on to log in, another computer term.
Mm-hmm.
I like this one. This was interesting.
I know. This is really interesting. It comes from logging days in the Pacific Northwest. Literally, after a tree was cut, the log was in the count of trees harvested. A word forming element number two, One is immersed or driven by, mostly from French-derived words, ultimately from the Greek logos, or logon, you know, an archaeology that all sort of study of, do work related to, or from the measurement of a ship's distance by dropping a log in the water that's tied to the ship.
Oh, gosh. Well, I thought of like a captain's log or something. And that's the only one that's anywhere close to that, ships. So I'll go with that one, but it doesn't seem right.
Holy smoke, am I it right? Is right. Oh, it's wow. Incredibly.
All right.
You're on. Yeah. If you wanted to know how fast your ship was growing, you drop a log over
you
the
drop
side.
Drop a log. Well, yeah, I guess so. So, well, there it goes.
Well, I believe it was attached to the ship.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, not if you're going really fast.
No, it's actually sort of cool because it was attached to the ship and the rope had knots on it.
Oh, sure.
And so, and the knot, you would count how many knots.
Yeah, okay.
The log was away, and then you could figure
there
it
go.
Out.
There go, knots for speed. We're going 7 knots.
Yeah.
Look at that log. Right. It's back there. I just want to go back to Fletcher saying logbook. The speeds, the log speed, when they were doing the knots from the log, were recorded in the logbook.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
That's how logbook started. And then, first it was just the speed, and then it became the book where you recorded anything important, like captain's log, star date, whatever.
Yeah.
Then it became the important thing. And then that was the genesis
that
of
is
it, though,
why.
Was just the log.
Oh, that is why. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that genesis makes a lot of sense because you're logging into the computer, you're putting a password in, you're basically, in effect, signing a modern logbook.
A modern logbook. Oh, man. So I was really right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You were incredibly right.
You were 1,000% right. Let's do deadline.
Deadline. We know the term deadline.
Uh-huh.
The original deadline. Where did it come from?
Ooh.
Okay. A 4-foot-high fence defining a no man's land inside the walls around the Confederate prisoner of war camp at Andersonville during the Civil War.
Wow.
You crossed the deadline, you were shot. Pretty grim.
Yeah.
2, much less grim. A guideline marked on the bed of a printing press. So it's like journalists, that you know how we say journalists have a deadline. Then you were not allowed to have type below the deadline. So it was like, that was it. You couldn't write anymore. That was mm-hmm. the point at which you had to stop writing.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, early English horse racing. When the horse runs over the finish line, the timing is over. It's dead. Not the horse, the race.
Horse could be dead too from tired.
That's true. Thank you, Ross.
Well, I was going to
purity
pick,
of the turf, Ross.
I was going to pick the printing one until you gave me horse racing. You guys know I can't resist horse racing, so that's what I'm going with is horse racing.
Well, we got you. We got him finally.
Finally,
it's interesting because the top one, the deadline with the Andersonville, is all over the place as an etymology. It sounds really kind of weird and exciting.
Yeah,
but the probable etymology is the bed of a printing press.
Okay.
You know, with the line and that type below that is dead.
Yeah, that sounded pretty good.
Yeah, Kathy just put a thing, how do we know, you know, which one it is? There is a lot of debate about this back and forth. And a lot of people still say that that one, oddly enough, is the correct one. But looking backwards on some of the research, it seems to me, and it seems to some people, that the deadline preceded the Andersonville, but then the Andersonville people took it up and then applied it to that, and then that became common. It is controversial, though, I should say that. I personally, and a number of other people, and I'm not sure, Kath, do you agree or not, feel that it's probably the type that then entered into the common thing during the Civil War.
I don't know, because, I mean, I can't see, to be honest with you, I think that it might be just two branches, because I can't see a commander of a Confederate prison knowing anything about a typography and a printing press.
But I think we go back to things like, I mean, we can argue this in this sense, which is interesting.
We could, and I think we might.
But, you know, because we did talk about earlier, I think a while back, we talked about how printing terms came into common.
Correct, but why would you apply deadline for a fence around a stockade from a printing press term. I don't to me it's not a logical extension.
Well, we have uppercase and
we
lowercase.
We had uppercase, lowercase is a very different thing though, because that's still about letters. They were letters from a case. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's a legitimate to me jump. Whereas like a printing press versus a prison, I don't feel it.
I think because the printing was ubiquitous in those days. I mean, there were like printers. Nowadays, printing
everybody
is like,
printed. Yeah.
Everyone printed. Every newspaper,
like
every town had
a
newspaper. So like, So like a deadline would be a very common phrase when you're like setting type for a paper, for a broadside, you know, for anything you're doing it. This is, how do we know? We don't.
It we just don't seems know. To, I'm just, I find it, I still, I find all of them actually problematic.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the last one we definitely know is because I made it up. So.
I know. Well, that was stunned that Fletcher
clicked. Well, I mean,
that one came completely from my head.
I didn't really even listen to everything he said. He just said horse racing, and so I said, okay, let's
like,
do
that's it.
But,
my bet's on that today.
But again, I mean, we've basically discussed something that it's a real problem in etymologies. You know, how do you determine which is what? You don't even have... Like, we don't even have first usages very confidently. My guess still is that the more you... The key thing for me that, Kathy, which I'm going to argue, and, you know, you could disagree, is that deadline was ubiquitous throughout throughout America in terms of printing. Everywhere, everyone knew what deadline meant in terms of a deadline on a sheet
of paper. Did they? Okay. I haven't...
it's like we were saying, with printing, everyone was printing. I mean, we have books, you know, in my collection, like from Hartford, Connecticut printers in, you know, I don't know, like tiny little towns in the South. So my guess would be that someone is going to know that term. So my guess would be that they would pick
I understand that up. What you're saying. I understand what you're saying. But the problem I have is, what I have seen is that deadline returned it was used in the South, American Civil War, the term died, and then it was then it became the printing deadline. The printing deadline was after.
Ooh.
That's what I have seen. That's why I'm debating it. And then I have seen the opposite of what you're saying, that some etymologists think that perhaps the Civil War deadline influenced the printing deadline. Hmm. So that's why I as far as I'm concerned, we go back to what I said earlier. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, though, I'm going to counter this for one last second.
Ah!
My guess would be, let's look it up in the OED, because my guess would be, I think Kathy may be right, that we first have deadline in the early 1900s, and then we backwards the other term deadline and say it came from that. I don't know. Let's look at the OED
okay,
for one
OED.
Second.
Okay, they have the initial is military prison's boundary line. Then they have, it says what I was saying, a deadline imposed by the printing office one.
That is interesting.
QED, or whatever you say in these cases.
I still am not going to go QED on this. I'm going to still argue that they may have said deadline then, but the deadline that we talk about does not come from that. And then later that was picked up. Because we see that in etymologies as well. They go
we
backwards
do, but
in
I
time.
Disagree. I'm sorry, Ross, but I am going to disagree.
Okay, we can disagree. We can agree
according,
to disagree.
If I'm just going to go with the OED guideline is 1917 on the printing press.
Okay.
1917.
Oh, wow.
1917.
So therefore, it probably, then I'm going to argue backwards that it probably did come from that. And then it was like ex post facto, you know, gone back, said backwards, but that never, because the one thing I do have a problem with, like a prison camp in a day without like movies, like, you know, Stalag 17 or something, they're not going to, I mean, how many people are going to know about that deadline?
Not many, but it's like, you just need a couple people that work on a newspaper.
Kath, who was there?
Ross, I haven't told you a lot about me.
You're my little sister by many, many years, Kath.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetris@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.